SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Day two of the Derby Oaks postscript. And, you know, normally, after every Derby Oaks, you know, we start to weave in the anecdotes and, you know, the various sights and sounds and experiences and so forth, and of course continue to recap, you know, the races during the weekend. But obviously the aftermath of Saturday continues to resonate, and it included a plethora of TV appearances and discussions yesterday, most notably at the beginning of the morning yesterday with Gary West. Gary, it's torturous, and I think everyone understands the frustration. And there's going to be an opportunity for West to sit down with the KHRC stewards on Thursday. And to be honest, don't you get the sense, and I know people are being critical and are, you know, kind of you know, looking at West as being, you know, just you know, tilting windmills and being, you know, a little bitter. Some of the comments from yesterday, you get the sense that, and I think I said this yesterday, you get the sense that if the stewards had responded to Jason Service's request for West to sit down and talk to them and to, you know, walk through, even if it was just the video that everybody else saw, even if it didn't include further camera angles and so forth, if they had just explained their call to West, that might have been all he needed at the time. And I think some of the, you know, some of the lashing out that came yesterday is really more a result of, you know, not being heard or not being addressed on Saturday night. And it does feel like a lot of the fallout and the critique, I mean, you know, the call's the call. And yesterday, you know, the KHRC, as everybody knew, KHRC was going to deny any appeal. That was known even ahead of, you know, of West filing a appeal, because the stewards' decisions aren't technically appealable. Is appealable a word? So we kind of knew that that was going to go that way. That's number one. And West, I think, will make a decision, I think, after Thursday, I would guess, if you can read between his comments and some of the things Ben Glass had to say as well. I think he just wanted an explanation. I think he just wanted a further explanation rather than the terse and inappropriate in terms of being complete and open and responsive from what came 2 hours after the decision from the stewards. And an extra, really, an extra half hour, 45 minute sit down with Service and and West and Ben Glass would have gone a long way, I think, to making it easier for the owner and breeder of the horse that crossed the wire first. I think it would have made it a lot easier for him to accept. So I said it yesterday. It's just that it's unsatisfying. It's no different. This is no different than what the Saints fan community and organization, you know, felt after the no pass interference and the Golden Knights fans and organization after, you know, after the 5-minute major call that was wrong. In addition to having to deal with horses, there's also the human element, and that's what makes this one so, so arduous with everybody. Because, you know, you heard yesterday from, there were 9 voices heard yesterday here, excuse me, including mine, and 6 of them thought that maximum security should have, could have been left up, and 3 of them felt that the DQ was the right call. Today you'll hear from some more voices, and it'll be fascinating because once again you're going to hear from somebody who was involved in the race and frankly involved in the moments leading up to and subsequent to the horses, you know, kind of coming together in that scrum. Steve Asmussen is going to join us first this morning, and I won't say that Asmussen had a better weekend than the Derby winning connections, Bill Mott and the team involved with Country House, because, you know, the Derby winner comes away and the Oaks winners as well come away as the kings and queen of Oaks Derby weekends. But, oh my God, did Steve Asmussen have himself a weekend? It's unbelievable. And it started on Saturday with She's a Julie. And that was, you know, that race, one of the unfortunate, really unfortunate parts of this overshadowing that the, you know, the DQ is, you know, dominating, obviously, the post weekend discussion. But holy cow, what a terrific race you had in the La Troyenne. Secret Spice, you know, digging in to the wire, and here comes She's a Julie, relentless under Ricardo Santana Jr. That was, you know, among the prequels to the features, to Friday's feature and then all of Saturday. That was one of the highlights, no doubt. And really the, you know, the first stake win, and we'll talk about it with Brad Cox later in the show, the first dominant performance. And, the, you know, there were, what was interesting is you had some classic, you know, shoulder-to-shoulder type battles, and then you also had some dominant efforts that really stamped a few horses, including the Klein Racing Homebred Break Even, who was breathtaking in the 8 bells. That was a wow performance, and it started the stake run, you know, with a real exclamation point. Sean Bridgemahan all the way back from his injury, and looking forward to talking to Brad Cox about that effort. And of course, Cox came back on Saturday with Beau Recall and Nick Quesada. I've been promising a Nick Quesada visit, Slam Dunk Racing. they had themselves a heck of a weekend as well, because in addition to winning on Saturday with Bo Recall, and it was funny because I came to the winner's circle and I'm looking for Nick, and I said to Brad, I said, where's Nick Cusato? He said, I don't think he came. I think he's back in California. And then minutes later, I'm not sure when it occurred, but Maxim Raitt wins the Senorita. So it was a tremendous weekend for the slam dunk team. And I think Nick, maybe tomorrow or Thursday, but I sent him a congratulatory text. They said, where are you?
I'm tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival.
Looking around. So
premier 3-day racing festival.
Well, thank you. John Embriel. John, what was your thought of the, what was your thoughts on the call? We may have to check in with Johnny I. Speaking of Johnny I, we will, Andy Serling, top of hour two. Jay Pribman will join us between Andy and Steve Aspison. And Jay was out and about yesterday, and his voice on some sports shows. Steve Crist, you heard from Andy Beyer yesterday, and I'm going to guess that after Andy got off the air, he sat down at the keyboard, because he appeared yesterday afternoon and into the morning. If you're a WAPO subscriber, it was on your doorstep or on your computer screen. Andy fleshing out his thoughts in print in the Washington Post again. So he actually saved. I'm glad I didn't prompt him, because he had, when I talked to him on Sunday, he had used a tremendous line where he said, I said, you know, what did you think of this? And he said, I thought it was like deciding the NBA finals on a foul away from the ball. And I said, oh my God, that's a great line. And he said, I think I'm going to save it for, I'll save it for the written, because he obviously had an idea about that he wanted to write about it, everything. So Steve Crist, though, today, and we'll also get John White. John will give you, you know, his valuable insight from the steward's stand, from the steward's perspective, and what they saw. And what everybody is seeing, frankly, I mean, there was some more video that came out last night. There's an excellent slow motion piece that, you know, that really does show that it's this was very close, and there's a point where it looks like War of Will gets his feet. You know, we talk about being tangled. Those feet were getting tangled before maximum security starts to drift. And I think everybody also, the more they watch, they are seeing what we mentioned yesterday, that Bodie Express was out of that race well before the incident. The incident really comes down to War of Will, Long Range Toddy, and Country House, and it's not so simple. I know everybody, a lot of people want to just make this so cut and dry. It's not. It never is. I mean, we deal with it, as I said yesterday, we deal with it all the time when we get DQ'd or when we get put up. So for us, it's, you know, it's obviously a more high-profile debate. But I can tell you one thing. It's not bad for the game, because there are so many people in mainstream sports and mainstream media that are fascinated by this. What do you mean that they disqualified the Derby winner? The people are like, they're very interested. So from that standpoint, okay, it's good. Nothing wrong with that. Meanwhile, quick note, as Steve Aspison is going to join us momentarily, and we'll talk about the amazing weekend that he had, and the away from Churchill success too at Oaklawn, because Laughing Fox, haven't had a chance to go over obviously the other races happened away from Churchill, but Laughing Fox for the Leblancs Alex and Joanne wins the Oaklawn Invitational, and you heard the inclusion of Laughing Fox in the probables for Preakness. So, and speaking of Preakness probables, we were waiting for a Baffert decision, and sure enough, Improbable is set to go. Mike Smith is going to ride, but Laughing Fox for Steve Asmussen and the Lee Belongs. And Steve Asmussen joins us, and I don't know how much of a better weekend, Steve, that you and your clients could have had. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
We got to start, obviously, with Mottoli, Steve, and that was as impressive an effort. He answered every question about distance and about rating. You have to be just in awe of what the show he put on Saturday.
He's a very talented horse that we're obviously very lucky to be associated with.
Steve, talk about, you know, the approach to the race, because, you know, the question we were all asking as handicappers was 7 furlongs, that's a different animal. There was plenty of speed signed on in this race, and, you know, here he was, he sat comfortably and went on cue when Ricardo asked.
He's a very intelligent horse, but he's physically capable, and we're just, like I said, it's circumstances. I was just glad that he was right on a day that mattered as much as Saturday did.
No, good point. And when it comes to, you know, the obvious opportunities for him, being by Escondrea, you get the sense that the continued stretch out is going to be worthwhile. He's a colt, and a race like the Met Mile seems irresistible.
But same thing going forward. If he is doing as well physically, I think that the race is obvious.
Outstanding. Well, now 7 for 10, and mentioning, you know, the Hollingbrotts, we got to tie them in, and it's one of your clients, one of your long-term clients that, you know, you've, how long? I mean, what they have to be one of your earliest clients, yes?
Well, very proud of the long association with Bill and Corinne Heidelberg. We never were fortunate enough to be put in the Hall of Fame. We were, you know, looking up stats and trying to accurately thank people. And at that point, we had already won over 1,000 races for Bill and Corinne, which I still cannot imagine winning 1,000 races for one client. So. I'm going to go with that covers long and productive association.
That's amazing, actually, and
it's mind-boggling to me. It really is, and then for us to have 2 Grade 1 wins on Derby Day with 2 Heidelbro-styled horses, big, beautiful, and big.
It's amazing, and how many Grade 1s actually have? How many Grade 1s have they won?
You know, I'm not sure. I do know that they had my first millionaire in Lady Tack when she won the Ballerina, which was a Grade 1. And
there you go.
So, like I said, a long and productive association is the only way I can accurately describe how fortunate I've been with the Heidelbergs.
Unbelievable. Well, Mottoli off this win absolutely sets up what could be just a titanic matchup with, who knows, McKinsey and some of the others that are waiting in the wings. And it's great to have him step forward like he did. You mentioned as well the other Grade 1, and I said to you as you were heading to the winner's circle, I said, boy, this, what a weekend this always is for me, a mischief. $25, Steve, I know you're not a better, but you would have thought that after last year, the 8 Bells win, that, you know, she was what, 4 exactas and 5 tries at Churchill, and she was terrific. She takes the Humana Distaff, one of the great races for fillies and mares. You guys were over the moon over that one.
Oh, very much so. She's such a hard trying filly and ran some extremely competitive races last year, And as you said, she stepped up on Oaks Derby weekend to win the Eight Bells, and I thought it was her best race to date on the racetrack at the distance, same time frame. And when she came back this year, you know, she is now owned by Heidelbros, the Hyder family, as well as Saul Coleman. We targeted the distaff, and I, you know, third race off of a layoff, and plenty of bottom in her, and she stepped up when it mattered, and very proud of her effort and her being able to show her best side.
You know, Steve, I don't know if you realize this. I'm just looking. I'm just seeing it myself, really, for the first time. Virtually every new high speed figure using just buyers, every buyer height that she has reached has come at Churchill.
Yeah, her best number to date, as I said, was the Eight Bells a year ago, previous to this. And then I believe I would expect for all reasonable that she reached a new height on Saturday. But it was expected, and 10 to 1 and $25 was not expected.
Well, it made for a special day for Ricardo Santana Jr. And going back even to Friday, let's get the other filly in here. And that was She's a Julie in the La Troyenne. And it really feels, not that Matoli and Mia Mischief and many more aren't, you know, favorite around the barn. I get the sense that this is really the princess of the barn, that your people were going crazy.
Well, she's named after my wife, Carol Castile, who they both went through throat cancer and have a connection. The people that have not been through something like that, you just don't have. And when Juliet spoke with Carol during treatment on what to expect in a very scary time, and then when Julie came out of everything good on the other side, Steve Flint had this filly for Carol and Evangeline at his place, and they loved her talent, and he had called me and asked me if he could name her after Julie. You can imagine. No, I don't know how to. It's above racing, and for that filly to now be a Grade One winner, she's run some tremendous races, but it's very emotional for all of us.
Very much, and you know, the entire winner's circle, Peter Bradley and his team, and the Hanley group, and Sal Kumin, and it just, you know, it was a joyous celebration, and you could really tell how much, you know, how much she means. And going forward, I would imagine that, you know, all the obvious distaff opportunities lay ahead of her.
Well, her first race back this year in the Boyacoa, she'd run some solid races last year, some good races. We just thought it was her best race to date, which definitely indicates that she runs well fresh. I thought that she got back on track last year, actually on the Oaks undercard when she was second in a solid other than the Geo game. And then, you know, that got her back on track. So I had a lot of confidence that she'd run a good race at Churchill Downs. And with the La Trione being a Grade One, it just I thought it came together extremely well. With that being said, we would expect to run her back at Churchill again this meet.
Excellent. And then through the summer, you got you know, kind of a distaff campaign, and these three horses in particular that we just talked about with Matoli and Mia Mischief. And She's a Julie in their respective divisions, Steve. They all basically move right, you know, right to the top. I mean, Matoli, I think, was expected, but the two fillies kind of edged their way to the sprint and distaff division elite.
Right, She's a Julie with her first Grade One. It puts her in the discussion with her barn mate, Midnight Bassoo, who reminded us yesterday morning working not to forget about her.
I love it. Well, are we going to see her in New York? Speaking of Bizou?
Ogden Phipps is her next target. We're obviously very excited about who she is, and she will be heard from.
Let me hit a couple of races on the two cards before we do a Derby notation. And Lady Apple, she was touting herself, Steve, all the way into the Oaks. She ran very well. Everybody basically was left in the wake of Serengeti Empress, but you can't be disappointed with Lady Apple's try.
I'm very excited about Lady Apple and how she's come on this year. And pointed out to me that by my youngest that she was the youngest filly in the race, and I think that she is physically as well, and I there's no telling how good she's going to get because there is physical improvement in her, and how much she's come on this year already.
What, of course, you know, we're only a few days removed, but again, three-year-old fillies and Oaks trails, and you know, with your operation, you know, there's a lot of Oaks stops. There's also New York races to look at. You know, what do you got in mind?
Well, when you look at her, I mean, just how much she stepped up from the pressure of the fantasy to move into Churchill for the Oaks Derby training and the All Eyes on You. I just love how she accepted that to the point was her by far strongest race in the fantasy. And I think that, you know, you see that in the horse and her personality, what a willingness to step up with pressure. I thought that the turnaround from the fantasy to the Oaks was tight, but felt she deserved the chance by how well she was training and traveling. But I do feel with time and space, and she will reach a higher level of performance.
A quick note on the way the Oaks unfolded, and you know, yes, there was the heel clip incident that sent positive spirit down, and luckily okay, and so was Manny Franco, and that could have affected some horses around her. But were you surprised that so little speed ended up, you know, confronting on the you know, emotion kind of chase that never really got close?
I find that I can't even let you finish with that. Find that hilarious that's your observation of a filly who won the Oaks going a mile and an eighth, going 46 and change the first half mile.
Well,
there was speed in there. Feel free to go with it. You can volunteer next time. It was Serengeti or two. I mean, she's a filly that won the Goldenrod by 19 and a half lengths.
Yeah, you're right.
Chill down. Go get her. Show us how soft that pace was. Go get her. I thought Ricardo rode beautifully this week. He used a little of her. You know, he said he could feel him sending a bit from the outside. Used a little bit of her in the first turn. Grabbed perfect position. Love how the filly just turned off. Cruised nice and smooth down the backside, and then I really felt she bravely held on for third in the Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah.
And as I said, the indication she's giving us off the race is that we're just touching the edge of her talent.
I love that, and you can, when you see Amos, you can tell him Bick tried to say nobody went with her. I
Oh, right. Yeah, you know why nobody went with her? She was going faster than they were. That's why nobody went with her.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
all right.
Sometimes they just earn it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it, you know, it was really what Amos did, you know, to snap her back and to go forward and let everybody watch as, you know, as he tried to get her ready for that spot. It really, there was a lot of courage involved on that end. He and Joe Politti, and they get rewarded with that. Let's turn to Saturday, and obviously the Derby is going to be talked about, Steve, you know, the rest of our days.
We hope it is. Keep it out there, man. We need the coverage.
Right? It seems like people that would never be interested before, they're like fascinated by what happened. What did you see? What did John tell you? And what are your thoughts on what unfolded?
it was the Derby. It's just usually the interference isn't caused by somebody who finishes in front of you. Think of all the horses that get stopped or eliminated at the quarter pole in the Kentucky Derby. But it's usually by something that's tiring and backing up through the field, you know? So just different circumstances. It's, you know, it's this year's Super Bowl may have been this year's NFC Championship game, you know? Just things happen.
I mean, as an observer, were you surprised, or did you think that the DQ was the only call?
You know, it's such a weird thing. You know, afterwards, now watching it and stuff, you definitely see contact and everything. But after the running of the race, you're just so concerned with the health of the horse that it doesn't change you with any decision. You know. You're just so worried that a horse of that level and stuff, that they're replaceable in so many ways, is okay, you know, that has given you so much. So our focus was on long-range Toddy and if he was okay, and we're very pleased that he came out of it as tough as his little blue-collar body can be, you know?
Absolutely. Well, in addition, of course, to Derby and Oaks, you also had a hatful of performances that, people might notice down the road, Limonite winning the race after the Derby, and Rotation breaking his maiden. And that maiden that won on Friday was nice, that Halla Walla.
Yeah, we're blessed with some very talented horses, and we obviously enjoyed the result.
Steve, away from Churchill, there was also the Oaklawn Invitational, the new fashioned Northern Spur, and the closing day at Oaklawn, and delighted for the Lieblongs to win with Laughing Fox, who has turned up.
But I want to know, is his victory in the Oaklawn Invitational more impressive than him getting beat a half a length by the Kentucky Derby winner in the Arkansas Derby?
That's a great question. After
we watched the Derby, you're watching like, man, what are you talking about, an overlay? Look at this.
Unbelievable, right? You're right. And Preakness, yes?
He traveled to Churchill yesterday, made it in good shape, walks this morning, goes to the track tomorrow. You know, very, very anxious to see how we're doing off of that.
Nice. Well, certainly the way in which the Lieblongs participate in the game, to have them in a classic with a real chance, that's a positive. Ramon Vasquez rode the Union Rags colt. And, you know, Steve, it's funny, with all the May foals that were so prominent in the Derby, and you also mentioned your filly, Laughing Fox is a May foal as well.
Yes.
Also a young
horse.
It's their
time of year. It's their time of year. It's how they're celebrating.
They're catching up. Well, Steve, in the wake of, you know, all the discussion around what happened Saturday in the feature, it didn't want it to be lost. What an amazing couple of days you and your team had, and congratulations to everybody involved, and obviously a lot to look forward to as spring and summer unfold.
Sounds good.
Yes, it does. And I'm already hearing from people that this is one of the great Asmussen visits of all time.
Okay. Good. Well, you have a good day,
Steve. Thanks a lot, Steve Asmussen. Everybody You know, it's funny. There's been several like that when Steve is just, you know, and you get him, you know, he's got so much to focus on, and you know, sometimes, you know, he's just more matter of fact. But not today, with a gleeful set of results at Churchill and away from it. Jay Privman joining us from the Daily Racing Forum as we press forward. Yesterday we heard from Dave Gray. And Andy Beyer today, Jay and Steve Crist. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Good, good. I mean, obviously, Jay, so much to absorb from a an unprecedented derby and weekend?
Unprecedented is the exact word to use. Never before in the history of the derby had a horse who crossed the wire first and disqualified for an infraction that happened in the race. So I guess I can add that to the things that I never thought I'd see after, for more than 30 years, covering the Triple Crown and thinking it's never going to see a Triple Crown. But this was certainly not as enjoyable a situation. I mean, no matter what you thought of the DQ, it's just an unsatisfying way for the race to end, because the horse who was probably the best runner in the race crossed the wire first. And, you know, Country House was not the one interfered with, but obviously there was significant interference to other runners that had to be addressed by the stewards, and then they chose to take the winner down. So it's just, you know, I just left there feeling unsatisfied. It was like, you know, because as well as Country House ran, and he ran obviously the best race of his career, and he's a progressive horse, he's getting better and better, and he chose the right day to show up. You know, he was second best to, you know, to Maximum Security. But, you know, when you look at what happened to War of Will and Long Range Toddy, and, you know, to a lesser extent, Bodie Express, you can certainly understand why the stewards had to act.
Agreed, and it doesn't necessarily make it an open and shut kind of a decision, and that's why so much debate has gone on. Jay, discuss the race from, you know, strictly a way it unfolded portion. To some degree, we discussed the pace scenario and whether Maximum Security would in fact go for the lead. We talked about how much speed it seemed was in signed on going in. Give us your take on what you saw as they went around.
Well, it's like, you know, as I said when I was on your show last week preceding the race, I didn't know how much speed there was in the race. I figured War of Will would go because of where he was drawn. My fear, with another twist of fate regarding the other horses in the race, was if they didn't respect him, you know, similar to maybe like War Emblem, that they thought, well, maybe he's just still, even though he's won four straight, his Florida Derby win was earned with a very soft pace, and if they ignored him again, it could be at their peril. But the way they came bouncing out of the gate and they flew through the stretch the first time, they were flying, and I think Jason Service really tipped his hand as to their intentions on Saturday morning, when he blew out Maximum Security a quarter mile. That was an old-school Alan Jerkins, Warren Studi kind of move, where you want to get a horse on his toes and ready to go. So when I wasn't out there at 5:30 Saturday morning. I was saw that Clocker John Nichols had posted that he had breezed a quarter mile. When I saw that had happened, that to me indicated that there's no question they are going to bust out of there and go for it. And that's what they did. And I thought he ran a remarkable race, considering what the pace was, the challenges that he faced from numerous rivals at the top of the stretch, and he was coming away from everybody in the last 100 yards of the race, which was just an incredible performance. It's just unfortunate that 550 yards from the wire, something caught his eye and caused him to react to where he veered out as suddenly and without warning as he did, and caused interference that, you know, fortunately didn't result in a calamity, because, you know, I'm glad that we're only debating a DQ as opposed to what's the future of the sport, because multiple horses and riders went down in an accident in the Kentucky Derby.
No doubt. And that part has been brought out, and the, you know, the horsemanship and the ability of the riders involved to, you know, to stay upright, very much part of that discussion. You know, we get to the, deep stretch, and really, and I thought that Code of Honor's performance and Johnny Velasquez's ride certainly very notable, and you don't necessarily, you know, look inside when Johnny's riding. His tendency is to come around, but he gave Code of Honor a magical voyage, and that's a subplot to this. And you know, then there's the whole magical mystery tour of Flavian Pratt, Jay, and his landing on Country House.
It's really, I'll go in those two in order, but yeah, the Pratt thing is unbelievable. But in terms of Velasquez, yeah, it was a great ride, and what happened was he was right behind War of Will as they went into the far turn, who was right behind Maximum Security, and then when, you know, Tyler Gaffalione had so much horse, he wanted to get out of there and give his horse a chance, and so he started to move out earlier than, you know, Velasquez, I assume, probably would have at some point had to get out if Maximum Security had held his line and not veered out. But when War of Will got out of there to try and get room, and then, you know, only seconds later, Maximum Security veered out as sharply as he did, that just gave Code of Honor a dream run right up the rail. And he got through, and in fact, in the official chart, he is listed as being ahead in front at the quarter pole. So the mile fraction actually belongs to Code of Honor officially. And he just—I mean—he just couldn't quite stay on and outfinish the other two, and then got promoted to second. But boy, I mean, he couldn't have got a better run. By the way, I know you've been on the air for the last 40 minutes or so, but it was Dave Brenning wrote this morning that Shug McGee told him that Code of Honor is not going to go on to the Preakness. He's just going to await the Dwyer. So that's one piece of Preakness news. I'll have another for you in a moment. But to your question or observation regarding Flavian Pratt, it's something I'd written about a couple of times preceding the race, just in the terms of covering, doing Derby Watch related stuff. But just to recap for everybody who doesn't know this magical mystery tour, as Steve put it, that Flavian went on, he in early March, he had a decision to make regarding the Rebel Stakes because Galilean was going to go there, who he'd been riding, and so was Omaha Beach, who he had been riding. And Omaha Beach only was going to the Rebel because he initially was going to go to the Gotham, but he had a quarter crack, and Richard Mandela wanted an extra week for the quarter crack to grow down, and the Rebel made the most sense for him. So he committed to Galilean in the belief that Galilean was already proven at two turns. Omaha Beach at that point had only won the maiden race, going 7/8 in the slop at Santa Anita, and so he committed to Galilean. After he committed to Galilean, Richard Mandela got Mike Smith to ride Omaha Beach because Mike Smith was going to be at Oaklawn that day to ride Midnight Bizu in the Azari. I hope everybody can follow all the bouncing balls there because there's going to be more. But and then, subsequent to that happening and those two calls being given out, Santa Anita suspended racing for, as it turned out, 3.5 weeks. And that caused the San Felipe to be abandoned. And when the San Felipe was abandoned, a number of horses who were intended for the San Felipe, like Game Winner, for instance, ended up going to Oaklawn. And as we all know, Oaklawn ended up splitting the Rebel into two divisions. Now, even though Galilean and Omaha Beach, as it turned out, ended up in different divisions, those calls had already been given out. So Pratt, even though Galilean ended up in a different division of the Rebel than Omaha Beach, Pratt was already committed to Galilean, and more importantly, the call on Omaha Beach had already been given to Smith. So even though they ended up in different races, that's where they ended up. So now that race is run, and those races are run, and Omaha Beach beats Game Winner that day, and Galilean is not as good on the day as Long Range Toddy and Improbable, and Mike Smith stays with Omaha Beach obviously, and wins the Arkansas Derby with him, and of course is named on him for the Kentucky Derby, and that doesn't, unfortunately for him, work out for and all the connections of Omaha Beach. So here's Pratt now sitting on the sidelines because Galilean didn't turn out to be as good as he thought he would be, and the horse that he could have, that he had been riding, who he gave up for Galilean, is now the favorite for the Kentucky Derbies without a mount. So now we come to how does he get on to Country House. Luis Saez, ironically the rider of Maximum Security, had ridden Country House in a couple of races, including the Louisiana Derby. But he needed to run back in the Arkansas Derby to get enough points to get in the race. And at that point, Mott, he just needed somebody to ride the horse to get him through the race. And if he got enough points, then he'd worry about who was going to ride him in the Derby after that. So Joel Rosario rode him that day. And one of the reasons Rosario rode him that day is because even though Mott knew he wasn't committed to him, he was fine riding Rosario. He knew Rosario was already committed to Game Winner. And importantly, 2 weeks earlier, Saez was taken out of the picture in terms of being able to ride the horse because he had won the Florida Derby on Maximum Security. They also, I think Mott wanted someone, just a different rider, to try his hand and just see if different tactics in the race might result in a better performance. So Country House runs third in the Arkansas Derby, which gives him enough points to get into the top 20 and into the Kentucky Derby, which he wouldn't have been had he not run in the race. But now he needs a rider because Rosario is committed to Game Winner. And Mott waited to see how the dominoes were going to fall, specifically to Mike Smith, because Mike Smith had now, after the Arkansas Derby, I think everybody will remember, a choice to make between Omaha Beach or Roadster. And both Richard Mandela, the trainer of Omaha Beach, and Bob Baffert, the trainer of Roadster, had made contingency plans of who they were going to ride if Smith chose the other horse. So as we know, Smith chose Omaha Beach, and Baffert hired, his contingency plan was Florent Giroux to ride Roadster, and that's how that played out. However, if Mike Smith had chosen Roadster, Mandela's plan was to go back to Flavien Pratt. So if Mike Smith had chosen Roadster, Pratt would have been named for the Derby on Omaha Beach, and then when Omaha Beach scratched from the Derby on Wednesday, Pratt would have been on the sidelines. So now he's given up Omaha Beach for Galilean to review what happened. And because of Mike Smith's decision regarding Omaha Beach or Roadster, Flavien Pratt does not have a mount. So now Bill Mott looks at who's available, and there were several riders I know that he considered, but he ended up choosing Pratt to ride Country House. And that is how, after all those twists and turns, Flavien Pratt ended up winning the Kentucky Derby. It's crazy, right?
It is. It is. And especially knowing, how orderly and calm his agent, Derek Lawson, approaches things.
calm, patient number of phone calls and texts I got from him. Do you know anything? Because he had reached out to Pletcher regarding yes. Cutting Humor as well. In addition to a number of riders who ended up not being in the race that were trying to get mounts on Cutting Humor and Country House, and he ended up getting the call. And one of the reasons he got the call is Mott wanted him to commit to riding Multiplier in the grass race preceding the Derby, so it was like a 2-for-1 deal. So that was part of the deal. Like, okay, you can ride my horse, but you got to ride this other horse in the grass race. It's like, fine, who's going to turn down a ride in a $1 million grass race? So anyway, but that's, I know it's a long explanation, but I just think it's a fascinating trail of just fate and how a rider just flops into winning the Kentucky Derby he even admitted it in the post-race press conference that he made a poor choice of Galilean over Omaha Beach, but it turned out that poor choice resulted in him ending up on the winning the Derby. It's crazy.
It's one of those, it's one of those storylines that the game authors, and it, you know, you don't know where it goes until it hits the finish line. And there's plenty of these that happened, you know, that end up with, you know, with riders that finished, you know, somewhere else in the chart. But the way this one falls in, just remarkable. And you know, he it wasn't just happenstance. He also delivered a tremendous ride from the 20 hole.
Right. I mean,
the 18.
The horse helped too, because he was into the race more than he had been.
Yes. Yes.
But yes, but he got it. He got a great ride. And fortunately, he was outside all the commotion that happened instead of behind it, where it might have compromised him. Because he's a big horse. You don't want to get him stopped. He's a big, strong horse. And that's why he's run as often as he has. He can take it.
Yep.
He's kind of a throwback. You know, I was going to say one little sort of coda to what you were mentioning about how sometimes it doesn't work out. I mean, can you imagine if Omaha Beach doesn't end up with an entrapped epiglottis, and if he had won the Kentucky Derby over a racetrack that really he would have probably loved, that kind of off track. I mean, then how does Flavien Prat finish if he crosses the wire, let's say, third, behind Omaha Beach and Maximum Security or something? But anyway, it doesn't win the race, and the horse that he gave up wins the Derby. It's a whole different story for him. So it's a remarkable turn of events that resulted in him being in the Derby winner's circle Saturday.
Amazing. Jay, a few notes and a few elements of this. You mentioned the track condition. I don't know how much examination is being done of the circumstances that found the track being harrowed and kind of opening it up to the elements.
Yeah, you know, that was a story that myself and Dave Brenning and Mike Welch, we sort of huddled before the race, and just because I always write the main story and then those two guys write sidebars, and we huddled before the race of like, okay, what if this horse wins, what should the sidebar be, and if that horse wins, what should we do, etc. And we decided, again, this is before the race, that Mike's story was going to be on the track, and let's just talk to all the riders and trainers after the race and how their horse handled it and why this was done. Well, obviously, with what went on in the race, that ended up not getting covered, because, you know, Mike and Dave reacted to the circumstances, and the news was the inquiry, and they jumped in and ended up, one did a story on on Mott, and the other on Pratt, because he just on Fayez. I mean those were the stories that needed to be covered. The horse that got DQ'd, and the focusing on Fayez, and then Mott getting his first Derby win. Those just had to be the stories that were covered, and we just didn't have the manpower to do the other thing. So that's something I think needs to be done in subsequent days. But then it was something we were intending to do until Maximum Security, 550 yards from the wire, decided to make a right-hand turn, and then the events, you know, it was necessary after those events to call an audible.
We'll see, but it does feel like, based on what I heard from several trainers, including Brett Calhoun yesterday and Mike Trombetta off air, that walking over, they were, and Pletcher apparently in a video portion, I guess it was at Kenny Rice, apparently saw Todd walk out into the middle of the track and then come back and rejoin his horses, and was asked, you know, you just went out to the middle of the track. He said, yeah, the track is, you know, different right now than it's been all day. And Calhoun and Trombetta said the same thing, that walking over, they were a little distressed at the rivulets of water and so forth. So there is something to discuss there. Talk about Baffert a little bit, Jay, and you know, his, I know he was not miffed per se, but he noted that he had told his riders stay clean, meaning be in the race, be someplace where you weren't getting a lot of spray. Improbable seemed position, but was also bottled up much of the way.
Right. I mean, you can you can hope that that's what you're going to kind of trip you're going to get. But once the gates open, I mean, you sort of every man for himself. Game winner, for instance, I mean, he just dropped right out the back. I mean, he was well back early, and then he got the scenic tour the rest of the way after that. Trackus, I think, has him running about 45 yards or so farther than anybody else in the race. It was crazy for 45 yards more than maximum security, I guess. It was a crazy trip for him. Improbable ran well of the three. Improbable is the lone one who's going to run back in the Preakness, and Mike Smith is going to take over on Improbable for the Preakness. The other two are going to await other spots. So obviously, Roadster didn't run well at all. It was the first time he'd really faced a big field in his career, and he just didn't run well. And he's a pretty slightly built horse, so I'm sure he'll have a little more time to his next race. I didn't get a chance to ask Bob what his plans are with Game Winner. I would assume it would be the Belmont, but I don't know that for a fact, and some of it might depend on whatever plans there may be for maximum security since they share common ownership.
The news that you came out with yesterday, of course, Improbable and Mike Smith for Preakness. You mentioned we'll get to some other Preakness things before we wrap. Any other notes from this result and this chart? I know we should see your recap discussion piece that you do. We love today, tomorrow.
Which one? I wrote my race recap and my follow up story. I'm not sure what you're.
Okay. All right. Good. I didn't see them. All right. I missed the expanded chart comments that you do.
Yeah, I just do that for the prep races, Steve. I've never done that for the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, anybody else in here that Vekoma kind of chased the pace for a while, by my standards, yesterday Brett. Basically felt that he just wasn't handling the surface as well as he would have liked, kind of held position all the way around there. You know, one thing, Jay, that was unusual about this wet track version, most times a wet track with that kind of a field, they'll they'll spread out and the spray will find the field strung out. And they were a little bit down the stretch the first time, but then the field really bunched up, and not just that group. I thought that was unusual.
It was. It was like an accordion, wasn't it? I mean, they were so spread out. The first quarter was blazing fast, 22.31, and that helped spread the field. Like I was saying, I mean, Game Winner was only in front of Master Fencer, who Master Fencer ran an unbelievable race.
We had a great race.
It was race shape aided, but still, it was certainly a far better performance than I would have imagined from him. And by the way, would you have thought that Master Fencer was going to be a shorter price than anybody, including Country House? But he was a shorter price than Country House. So anyway, moving on. But the race slowed down, especially in the third quarter, where they went. The third quarter mile of the race was in 25.88. And the fourth quarter of the race went in 26.13. So that third quarter, I think, really, Saez gave maximum security a breather there. He did everything right until, I think 99% of the incident was horse caused, as opposed to jockey caused, in my opinion. But he did what he was supposed to do on a horse like that. He gave him a little bit of a breather to catch his breath, and then he had something for the end of the race. And I think that part, that third quarter mile, as they were going from the 6-furlong pole to the half mile pole, that was when the field really started to bunch up, because they only went that third quarter mile in 25.88. And that's what resulted in that bunched field that we saw at that point in the race.
Well, Jay, before we hit a couple of other highlights from the weekend, is it unfair to say, I just had Steve Asmussen, and Steve noted that this, controversial circumstance seems to be a positive, that there's people kind of fascinated by what transpired. Was this good for the game, is the question.
I don't know if it's good for the game, but it's it's a good talking point for the game. I wish there was more transparency. I thought it was appalling that the stewards didn't take questions when they came down 2 hours after the Derby to just read a statement. If you're just going to read a statement and then walk away, just pass it out. That was equivalent. So, and to me, that was an opportunity to say, here's why we did what we did. Let's show in slow motion from the quarter pole camera, watch frame by frame what happens here. And then say, here, and this, based on this, and A, B, C, and D, this is why we decided to make this decision. And I just thought the way they handled it showed a shocking lack of understanding that this is the biggest race in the country. So to your question of like, is it a positive for the sport? I don't know. I'm glad people are talking about horse racing. And maybe this inquiry, no matter which way the stewards went, would have resulted in discussion, because if they'd have left the horse up, there'd have been equal discussion over, was that the right decision? And, how could you leave a horse up? That would have been sort of the thing. How could you leave the horse up? This is more, now it's become like, how could you take the horse down? Why did you take the horse down? It could have been, why did you leave the horse up? So I'm glad people are talking about horse racing. And maybe by having the inquiry, it's certainly generated more discussion, but to put a label on it as positive or negative, it's just not really something I know that's accurate one way or the other. It's just in my world.
Fair enough. Let's also hit any highlights. What else struck you over the weekend? I know you covered the Ali Sheba on Friday, a crafty ride by Smith and a big performance. I just had Asmussen about Mattioli. It looks like the two of them could collide in the Metropolitan Handicap.
Yeah, I mean, that was what Steve had said right after the race the other day. I would love to see those two hook up. I think Mattioli is an incredibly talented horse. And like you were saying to Steve, you think, being by Escondrea, there's certainly no problem with him being able to go out to a one-turn mile. And McKenzie's race was terrific, got a fast fire speed figure. So to see those two hook up on Belmont Day would certainly make it maybe the race of the day if there's no horse going for a Triple Crown, that's for sure. So that was one of the performances. And then the other thing I'd like to say is that the horse who won the Kentucky Oaks needs Lasix, and she bled through her Lasix in her previous start. I know it's a controversial discussion to talk about Lasix and whether it should be used or not used, but the fact of the matter is Serengeti Empress would not be racing and not racing well if it wasn't for something that controls a problem that she obviously had in the Fairgrounds Oaks and that was alleviated and allowed her to run in the Kentucky Oaks.
Absolutely. 100% correct and in full agreement, Jay. Turning toward Baltimore, you mentioned other Pimlico news that to offer.
So the two pieces of news this morning is Dave, as I mentioned, Dave wrote earlier this morning that Code of Honor is going to await the Dwyer. He'll bypass the Preakness. And then Blaine Wright informed me that Jose Ortiz will ride another Twist of Fate in the Preakness. So that's another Twist of Fate that, was second in the Lexington to Owendale. And Owendale is also bound for the Preakness. And when it looked like he wasn't going to have enough points to get into the Derby, combined with running him back again in 3 weeks after the Lexington, which was 3 weeks after the Sunland Park Derby, they just decided to go back to Golden Gate and trade him up to the Preakness. And he had gotten a free roll in the Preakness by winning the El Camino Real Derby back in February at Golden Gate. And so with Tacitus not going on to the Preakness and Jose Ortiz coming open, he's going to take the ride on another Twist of Fate. So that's this morning's Preakness News Update, brought to you by the Baltimore Chamber of Commerce. Come eat our crab cakes and go to the Inner Harbor. And if the Orioles were home, go to an Orioles game. But they're not home next week, which should be a civic crime that the Orioles are not home the week of the Preakness, at least the early part of the week. Very disappointing.
That is disappointing.
Yeah, I like going. The Tuesday night Orioles game was a tradition for many years. Very disappointing.
Well, we'll see if we can't get that back on the schedule. Well, Jay, in that case, there's only one thing to say. Hi-ho!
I hope him will come.
Jay Privman, everybody. DRF Privman, and we will look to see Jay in Baltimore and watch for Daily Racing Form news leading into the second leg of the Triple Crown. And as always, Jay, just so appreciative of the coverage and the information and the frank talk. Thank you. Jay Privman. Let's take the top of the hour, a little past it, a couple of minutes past, and we'll come back with Andy Serling. We'll get Andy's take, and we'll also get a chance to talk about the stakes that we saw Friday. Well, no Friday because they canceled, but Saturday and Sunday. They didn't cancel the whole card because we ran fourth in the second race with Carlisle Bell, but the rest of that card, I think from race five on, was canceled, including the flat out, and that was rescheduled for Thursday. But how about Carlos Martin's Come Dancing? She keeps rolling along. And then there were the Westchester and the Sheepshead Bay and Fort Marcy. Andy Serling next, Steve Crist in a little bit, Brad Cox as well, and John White. We'll get a little steward stand insight from John back after this, hour two.